Artist, you are on day 5. Can you believe it? We're clear past the halfway point of the Smartest Pillow Summit 2007. And today we will have Molly Gordon and Steve White in the first hour and a half, then our 15-minute break, and another round with Alita DeWall. But before we roll, we want to offer thanks to ArtSpan.com and ArtExchange.com, our sponsors. They provide website space for artists to showcase their work. Check them out. See if it makes sense for your career path. So Smartest Day 5, and what better way to start out than with a smart-talking, straight-shooting, sweet and sassy Molly Gordon, who is not afraid of putting her heart into all she does. You can sample her work and subscribe to her Enlightened E-Zine for Accidental Entrepreneurs. And that, I believe, is all of us on this call today. It's at AuthenticPromotion.com, all one word, AuthenticPromotion.com. Hi, Molly.
Hi there.
I'm glad you're here.
I bet you are.
You're okay, I take it.
I'm fine. I somehow had Thursday and Friday down, and I guess we're Wednesday and Thursday, so.
All right, well, I'm glad you were there, not out having a cappuccino somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely, so am I.
So would you like me back to open up for questions toward the end?
Sure, and I just want to double check because I had these dates switched. Which of my two sessions I'm doing here?
This is Wednesday, so you're doing your session on the vision. Let me see. It's not the 5 3/4 keys. That's tomorrow.
The in 3 inescapable laws.
That's the one.
Good. Thank you. I thought it might be helpful for people if I talked about what they expected.
I'm so glad you're an old hat at this because I know it's not going to throw you.
No problem.
All right. So how close to the end would you like me to pop back in? We've got about 8 minutes into the session already.
Yeah. Let's do 5, and I'm happy to also answer questions by email.
Okay, great. All right. It's all yours, Molly. Take it away.
Okay, great. Well, hello, everyone, and I do apologize for throwing this off. And it occurs to me that in your careers as artists, that you're no stranger to surprise turns. So perhaps we'll even be able to weave this glitch into our topic today. I'd like to begin with the quote from Peter London that's on your mind map. The end of art is not art, but communication, or better still, communion. Breaking out of the solitariness and silence of one dimension of ourselves and making contact with the other. When it comes to selling art, we are always talking about communication, communion, relationship. You don't sell to yourself. So selling is always about relationship. And that is the first law, inescapable law of selling. Too often, whether you're an artist or a dentist or a convenience store owner, we think of the customer or buyer as an other that is almost alien. In order to have a relationship, we have to know who this other that we're going to relate to is. We also have to know who we are. You know, who are you in this relationship? And then the corollary of exchange. So the three facets of this law we'll look at this morning or this afternoon, depending on where you are, is who are you in this relationship? Who are the buyers in this relationship? And what is the exchange, and what roles do each of you have in this exchange? So it may seem obvious to you who you are, and it might seem obvious to you that you're present in this relationship of selling, and I'm going to propose that's not always true. If you're entering into selling your art from a place of feeling victimized or disempowered, or resentful, or invisible, you are not in the fullest sense showing up. Now, there's all kinds of good reasons why you might feel victimized or disempowered or disengaged or resentful, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not inviting you to criticize yourself when that happens. I'm just asking you to notice and acknowledge that you are not fully in a relationship when that's going on. So the first thing you have to do to establish relationship is become present. Become present to yourself first as a human being. You're a person. You've got feelings. So you're going to want to take steps to deal with them. You're doing that in part by taking this Smartest Telesummit. You may do it by hanging out with your buddies in the art world, by getting support from family, friends, from patrons, buyers, gallery owners, teachers, people who can support you in the arts. You are an economic being. This means that you probably don't live out of the back of your van. Even if you do, you're an economic being. You live in a culture where laws of the economy govern the flow of goods and services. What I'm trying to say is you have a right and responsibility to make a living. You are most likely a family member or a member of various communities. And there are numerous other aspects to who you are. All of this comes in to who you are in the selling relationship. You are also an artist. But notice that being an artist is only one factor of who you are. And if you enter into relationship to sell your work as an artist only, you're going to experience over and over that horrible sense of vulnerability, exposure, disempowerment, and sometimes resentment. When you bring the rest of you to the relationship, I think you will find that you're much more powerful. You're also going to find, when you bring the rest of you to the relationship, that you are more present to who they are. You're a human being. They are a human being. You're an economic being. They are economic beings. And let's take a look at that. You know, other economic beings make economic decisions for reasons that have nothing to do with you and your art. When you really understand this, you will be free from that feeling that money defines your value as an artist. It doesn't. Money describes the value of a piece of work at a specific moment in time, at a specific space, a place in space, in a specific market setting. It does not define the value of the work absolutely in terms of its artistic meaning or value, in terms of its spiritual value, in terms of its personal value. It doesn't, money does not have anything to do with the aesthetic value of a piece of art. Money describes the economic value of a piece of art at a specific point in time and space in a specific market setting. It's not about you. And in many ways, it's not about your work in the way you may think about your work. Who are they? They may be artists. They may not be artists. This has something to do with how they're going to experience the meaning and value of your work. And we'll look at this more when we get to the other two laws, the law of value and the law of accessibility. They also are family members. Excuse me, and workers, and have other roles in the world. And when you understand this, you will be able to see that the choices they make about your work are not about you. As soon as you define someone else's choice as about you, you are taking them hostage. And they're going to behave like most hostages behave, sullen, disengaged, and pretty hard to get along with. They're not likely to whip out their checkbooks. So this sense of humanity, although it may seem obvious, is far from trivial. Excuse me. Then there's the exchange. In any relationship, exchanges happen according to different rules or traditions. In the exchange for art, your part and their part and the money are the main factors. Your part is to set a price with the help usually of a curator or a gallery owner or some other advisor. Your part is to do your work, present your work, put it on display or make it available, and then your part is to let go. You make your offer and you let go of the result. The other party's part is to respond. Money, as your mind map I have, it's about the money and it's not about the money. The exchange, of course, is about the money because money is the mechanical vehicle through which we carry value from one person to another. The buyer takes away your piece of art, you take away their money, and then you use the money to buy somebody else's work or to buy groceries or whatever. So, of course, it's absolutely about the money in the sense that the exchange doesn't happen without it. And it's not about the money in that what's really being exchanged is value, the value that the buyer places on your work of art and how that measures up against all the other choices they need to make in their life. This will become clearer, I expect, when we look at the law of value in just a minute. So in relationship, what's often missing in art business is clarity about where you begin and end, where your work begins and ends, and where the buyer begins and ends. That all gets muddied up, and you can feel like the buyer's making a decision about your personal value. This is why it's so important in the exchange that what you put out there, you let go of once you put it out. So let's look at the law of accessibility. You can't sell it if it's under your couch. You can't sell it if it's in your garage. These are a couple of corollaries of the law of accessibility. But even more, it's about where are you? Where is your work? Where will people find you? How will they find you? And I made this little note. You're not the only one who feels marginalized. So many people, when they go by an art gallery or a museum or a craft fair, feel marginalized. They feel excluded from the private language and culture of art. They feel that it's not enough to know what they like. You know, that old saw, I don't know if it's art, but I know what I like. They feel embarrassed because maybe their true response to Jackson Pollock is, I don't get it. My three-year-old can do that. When we're not making fun of these responses, when we allow these people to be human beings, we might notice that it's hard to appreciate and buy something if you're on the margins. So when it comes to making yourself accessible to people, consider that the other party can feel just as marginalized as you do. And if you're the one wanting to make a sale, to present your work, to open the conversation, to open the communication, it's incumbent upon you to make yourself accessible. So often artists can feel, and I speak from my own experience as a fiber artist, sometimes I just felt like I did not want to talk about my work. I did not want to ask any more questions about where my inspirations come from, how much time it took me, how much my materials cost, yada, yada, yada. And yet, it is the business of the buyer to ask because they don't know. They're not living what we're living day in and day out. One way we make ourselves and our work accessible is by opening to the questions that may seem boring and tedious and repetitive to us. and by generously answering them. And there's some ways to do this that are under elements of access. If you find that you're often fielding questions that get irritating or repetitive, create some information sheets. Hand them out with a smile. Say, you know, I get so many questions about that I have written up this little outline about my work or this description of my work. I'd love to give it to you. And after you've read it, if you have any other questions, you know. So create some systems that support you in meeting the needs of the other party without depleting you as an artist. Pedestals and pits. We can put ourselves and our art on a pedestal, or we can put ourselves and our art in a pit, feeling sorry for ourselves. Both, I hold, are defenses against connecting with someone who could have an emotional or financial impact on us. So be aware of the temptation to either stand above or place yourself below your customer or the buyer. How would it be to do the business of art at what I call street level, where everyone brings themselves just the way they are to the encounter? And it's about communication. The person who's looking at your art, buying your art, learning about your art, doesn't need to know more than they know. They can bring their questions. You don't have to be any better a businessman than you are, provided you bring your questions and your requests to the table. So access is about communication. It's about letting people in to who you are as an artist, to what you do, to what you need from them in order to share your work. There are other elements of access, and I wrote a few of these on the mind map, but I'd like you to jot some down too. Notice what things get in the way when you're preparing for a show or a studio visit or to ship work for a gallery, any of the ways that you typically bring your work into the marketplace. What are the points of irritation, frustration, alienation? And then instead of regarding them as barriers, turn it around and create them as criteria for access. So, for example, I often talk to artists who have arrangements with galleries where insurance and shipping are considerations. And the artists will come saying, they haven't made any arrangements about insurance. And I'll say, well, have you asked? Rather than taking things that are concerns to you and turning them into problems, turn them into requests. Decide before you talk to a gallery, make a list of the things that have to be covered. Pricing, payment terms. Is the gallery going to be empowered to do any negotiation? If a patron wants to buy two or three pieces, can the gallery make some allowances on price of the total piece? Can they negotiate for you? If so, how does that affect their commission? What percent do you expect to get from the retail price of your work of art? Rather than going in and feeling victimized when a gallery says we have a 70-30 or a 50-50 split on pieces that we take on consignment, know for yourself what you want and why you want it, and under what circumstances you'd be willing to vary that. So this is not about drawing a line in the sand and say, I never take less than 50% for my piece. But it's knowing that I ask for 50% for my pieces, and if the gallery is going to take 60, I need to know how I'm going to make up that other 10%. Is it superior exposure? Is it the particular group of people that this gallery can put me in front of? Is it that in this particular market, the prices overall can be set quite a bit higher, and so I'm going to take away the same amount of money? Is it that I would give my eye teeth to show with the three other people in this show? be clear so that the choice you make is made out of an authentic feeling of having been fully compensated and not a negative compromise. Sometimes it's worth going into a show for the pure experience of learning to show. If you're new in your career, you may be willing to take to show in smaller or less prestigious venues or to make smaller commissions because you're getting the business education and the marketing education, and there's no shame in that. You know, people spend tens of thousands of dollars a year for a Harvard MBA. As an artist, you're going to get your MBA in trade. And I would invite you to collect that. It's really important compensation. The artist statement is a very important and powerful aspect of access. And, of course, Ariane has written a whole book about it. And at my websites, authenticpromotion.com and mollygordon.com, in the resources sections, there is a briefer process for writing artist statements that many people have found very effective. I see the artist statement as the doorknob, the invitation into your work. Sometimes artists write statements that seem designed to keep people away. And actually, in some settings, this may be perfectly appropriate. If you're showing in a Tony Manhattan Art Gallery and it's all about using the latest in art jargon, well, then go for it. But for most of us and most of your buyers, the artist statement wants to be more intimate. Write in the language that they can understand and language that comes from your heart. Why do you do this? What do you care about? What are the stakes for you? What is juicy for you in this? What are the risks for you in this? And what's the human story behind your art? Writing an artist statement and making it freely available is one of the kindest things you can do for the person who's buying or viewing and for yourself. It can be the core of this communication. Sometimes artists resist this, saying, I want my work to speak for itself. Well, that's nice, but turn on the phonograph, please. You know, the artist statement is like turning up the volume, letting people hear it. A good artist statement will never trump or obscure your work. It will only invite people in where then they can engage and have an enriching conversation with your work. So let's move to the law of value. This is really important, and this is a sticking point for so many of us in selling. We take prices and the act of selling very personally often. And again, I'd invite you to put yourself in the other person's shoes first. Nobody wants to make a bad decision buying anything, and nobody wants to make a bad decision buying art. So you or the gallery owner or the store or shop or show that you're working with, please put effort in to helping your customer get over the fear of looking foolish. Acknowledge that for some people, the choice is between buying art or feeding their children or getting a new car. And if your audience is an audience that's buying art as an investment, give them the information and context they need to make an investment. You know, get representatives, be able to have an intelligent conversation about the market value of your work and of similar work, or have a rep or a gallery that represents you who can have that conversation. This does not demean your art. This is simply a necessary part of giving the people who want to invest in it the information they need. When you're clear about how to help people make wise buying choices, you're also equipping those people who appreciate your work and are not the perfect buyer to enjoy your work and carry the message. By not pressuring them to buy and by not embarrassing them for not being in the market for the work, but generously allowing them to enjoy it, they become advocates. They've been invited in. They've been included in the circle of your work. And now they can speak about your work with all the enjoyment and passion and excitement of someone who's on the inside. And that will communicate over time to other people who do have the money. You know, none of us do this for the money, and most of us need money to do it. So we never want to reduce people in our audience to dollar signs. And the clearer we are about the price that needs to be paid for an exchange, and the more we can let go of how that happens, the freer everyone is to enjoy our work. There's a real paradox in this, and so I invite you to go back and listen to this session and even slow it down, because I'm throwing a lot of pretty intricate conceptual material at you. Listen to a bit, notice where you push back, and write down your pushback, write down your arguments and your questions, and email them to me. You can send them to me, care of Ariane, if you like, if that's her preference. I would be happy to answer them and make them available through Smartest. Your job is to know the value of your work. Most likely you know the intrinsic value of your work, but it is also your job to know the economic value of your work, and that is set in the marketplace. So go to shows, read the art mags, talk to other artists, talk to professionals, and do it from the perspective of learning so that you can become educated in how to set the economic value of your work. The economic value of your work is not personal. It's interpersonal. It is not about you. It's about the marketplace where everyone around your work meets. When you learn the economic value of your work, you will also be learning where to position your work so that it reaches the right person at the right price. This goes back to the law of accessibility. All of these laws are interrelated. It's your job to distinguish between the economic value of your work, the artistic value of your work, and the value of you as a human being and an artist. These cannot be equated, or you're going to burn out. Even if you were to wildly succeed, you will burn out because you'll feel like you're selling your soul. So whether you expect or are experiencing great economic success or having a difficult time initially selling your work, if you fail to distinguish between your personal value, your value as an artist, and the economic value of the artwork, you will burn out. So please take the time every day to acknowledge yourself as a human being, to connect with yourself as an artist, and then to notice your work as a separate entity. And then finally, it is your job. It is part of your job as an artist to promote your work. There are many other sessions in the Smartest Summit that will show you how to do this. The point I want to make today is that if your work is going to have value in the marketplace, and if it's going to have value as a means of communication in the community of the human beings, you must teach, demonstrate, understand, and make understandable your work. You must promote it, move it out into the world, and be an advocate for it. So I think, Ariane, I don't know if you're back yet.
I am, my dear. And Molly, thank you. That was really full. I have a question I forgot to post because of our little, you know, confusion in the beginning. But one of the participants said that she could not print out the mind map because it was too big to fit on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and didn't know how to resize it.
Usually inside a printer dialog box, there is something to do that. If you open it in Adobe Reader, let me see. Most printers, in my experience, most printers or readers will automatically resize it. My print dialog box says page scaling, reduce to printer margins.
And you can go up to format is another option, and it will say format document.
Yes.
And you can also use that to resize.
Right.
And if you have a Word, you know, or something else.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, I'm having the same trouble you are with my throat.
Right. There is also in page setup, there may be options there for, depending on your printer and your software, often there's a little place to put scale, and you can play with different scales.
Okay, great. All right, Molly, I'm going to open up the lines for questions. Hang on. Okay, artists, if you want to ask a question, unmute yourself with *6. Tell me your name so I can acknowledge you, and then you'll know I hear you.
This is Sheila.
Yes, Sharon?
The real simple answer to that just question that I found, I had scaling and everything, was just in page setup, I changed the page to horizontal and reprinted, and it comes out fine in a horizontal setup.
Thank you very much for that information. Okay, you can *6 yourself back again. And another artist, would you like to speak and ask Molly a question? I can't hear anybody, so if you're trying to ask a question, you might want to hit *6. Hello, is somebody there?
Yeah, this is Reeve Nestor in San Francisco.
Hi, Reeve. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, hi, Molly. The question of, and thank you, great, great information. A lot of things really hit me, so thank you. And listen to it again, but you were talking about the economic value of the artwork and to go out and check other art to see what's comparable.
Mm-hmm.
But my question about that is part of my work is bronze. And
yeah.
Because the expense of the bronze is so much, it's mm-hmm. a very difficult thing for me to know how to price. But to compare it to other artists is difficult because it's how do you deal with the part that artist is either shown less than you or more than you, and how does
right.
that value, how do you...
What I've always done for pricing is part science and part art. You know, I triangulate. I look at the marketplace in general. I look, for one thing, I'm not going to sell something for less than it costs me to make it, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
There's always a cost plus formula. And I also check in with myself. You know, what in my heart can I do and not do? This is where it's very helpful for an
Molly,
artist.
Hang on a second. Yeah. I'm going to put you back on 5 to talk because of the background noise. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. It's it's helpful and almost necessary to be able to price your art without needing to sell it right now, if it's fine art. In the craft arts, most of us have more leeway for pricing things at various levels so we can create cash flow, whether bigger pieces are selling or not. And in your work, I don't know what your opportunities may be, whether it's miniatures or posters, but I would explore ways to create cash flow that doesn't depend on the big bronze. And I would always do at least 3 things for pricing. I'd look into the marketplace for comparables, and comparable would imply people with a similar amount of experience in a similar market. And you may not be able to find, it's like appraising houses. You might not find a perfect comparable. You might have to go across the country to find artists with the same amount of experience, the same scale, the same sort of buyer profile. And that particular marketplace might be skewed higher or lower than your own. So it's science and art. Always figure out your costs and have some minimum formula for your labor. And Carol Michaels suggests you look at what you would do if you had a day job or if you do have a day job. If you're driving a cab and making $20 an hour, you figure your time making art at $20 an hour. This is not, it's not prestigious, it's not fairy tale, but it works. And you add that cost to the cost of your materials and overhead. And then, of course, you have to add whatever a gallery would cost. And then finally, you do the gut check. I like to write down a price and sleep on it and just see how it feels. Say the price a few times to somebody and let that tell me. So does that help, Reed?
Okay, go ahead. You can answer her now.
Yes, that does. Thank you very much. I'll take that. That is much of what I've been thinking about, but so many I get caught up in the place where the people who know my work say you cannot take it down to that price. It's worth so much more. You can't do that.
Yeah.
But I want it out in the world.
Right.
And I would like
you're the authority.
Right.
You know, I would say that I love that you feel that way, and, you know, anytime you want me to write me a check for that, I'm here.
Exactly. Okay, thank you. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
All right. We have time to take a couple more questions. Is there someone else who would like to ask Molly a question? You need to *6 to unmute yourself. Say your name so I can acknowledge you. Is there anyone else out there who would like to ask a question? I'm not hearing anything.
Right, I've stunned
Sabrina.
Everyone.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, who's speaking, please?
This is Rena.
Rena, go ahead.
Hi. My question is how to, well, I don't have a big body of work, but the quality of my work really does stand up to people who do have big bodies of work and charge very high prices.
Mm-hmm.
So my gut says it's okay for me to charge those prices mm-hmm. and feel great about it. But I wondered, am I missing some point in reality here?
I don't know. If you don't have a big body of work, it tells me it's a scarce commodity and demands a high price. So I don't necessarily see where the size of the body of the work would affect the price, except if it means that you're unknown and so people don't know how to compare it to anyone else. Can you say a little more?
What I do is commission portraiture.
Okay. So you don't have a big track record.
Right.
Yeah. That just feels a little different in pricing terms than the size of your body of work. You know, it's all about how you can position yourself.
Okay.
And also how long you can afford to wait between purchases.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and it's entirely up to you. You have the right to charge whatever you want. And it only makes sense to charge what will also work for your life circumstances. And truly, if you'd rather do 4 portraits a year for a very high sum of money versus 1 a month for less, do it the way you want to and the way makes you feel good and that allows you to do the best possible job for the person who's commissioning the portrait.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Does someone else have a question they would like to ask Molly? We can take one more.
Yes, this is David.
Yes, go ahead.
How do you deal with the gallery issue of pricing when the gallery itself prices it at such a high that they don't sell it? How do you go back to them? I find it really tricky and telling them, you priced it, but it's too high and you're not moving anything.
Yeah. Well, in that case, I would think that I might be in the wrong gallery. Or I would just trust and take more time. I really believe in trusting the gallery to know their clientele and their market. So personally, I would find it not terribly helpful to argue with the gallery. You might ask. You say, would it be smarter to price it less? But more likely, I would let it be there, let it establish that you're worth that in that marketplace, and look for galleries in a different geographic area
and play with a slightly different price point. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I agree that some of those galleries, I just shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Very often it's just not the, you know.
Not the right gallery.
Yeah, just not the right gallery. And that's okay. You just want to keep looking.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Well,
thank you. Thank you so much, Molly. I'm going to put us back on star 5. Hold on.
Okay.
Oh, I'm just delighted. And tomorrow you're going to be back with us again at the same time, just a couple minutes earlier.
Yes, earlier.
And until then, my dear, enjoy the life.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.